today, Foster v. Hill. Mr. Allen.
Judge Kaney.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is David Allen on behalf of the defendant at Appellant, Kirk Hill. Mr. Miller, good morning. This case arises under the Westfall Act and presents the Court with the issue of whether the District Court erred in holding that my client acted outside of the scope of his employment as a Navy SEAL when on March 5th, 2002, he assaulted a complete stranger at the Great Lakes Naval Hospital. Mr. Hill, and it is undisputed, uncontested by the government, was acting under an insane delusion at the time that he encountered Mr. Foster. It caused him to believe that, not that this was James Foster, but this was a Somali warlord, that this was General Mohammed Fahir Adid, who was there to kill him.
Mr. Allen, under your theory, would it have made any difference if at the time of the attack on Mr. Foster, Chief Hill had no employment duties at all other than to continue his outpatient treatment? In other words, if he was not leading the physical fitness training?
Chief Hill testified that his job was a SEAL, 24/7 at all times. His assignment, in contrast, would vary. Sometimes it would be that he would be engaged in combat situations in Mogadishu in Somalia, in Bosnia, which is a policing action, in Operation Desert Storm, Desert Steel. So in answer to your question, no. 24/7, Mr. Hill was a Navy SEAL. He was...
could the Navy have done anything short of discharging him to effectively take the possibility of engaging an enemy out of the scope of his employment? What else could they have done here?
If I understand the Court's question, they would have had to discharge him in order to take him outside of the scope of his employment. They did not do that. They put him on a temporary assignment at the Great Lakes Naval Hospital, and they allowed him they treated him first on an inpatient, and then they allowed him into the general population, and they gave him a temporary duty assignment. But at all times, as he testified, and it is undisputed, there was no testimony from the Department of Defense or anyone on behalf of the government that his duties and responsibilities as a Navy SEAL were 24/7 at all times.
There are rules of engagement that depended on what theater he might be in, right?
Exactly right.
And he acknowledged that he was not within any particular rules of engagement.
Like apples and oranges, he said, I was not at Great Lakes in a rule, I was not in a combat situation. That's absolutely true. But I think that the district court, and all the parties for that matter, were acting without the benefit of the Illinois Supreme Court's decision last month in Badgen versus Blessing Care Corporation. If I may read from the Illinois Supreme Court's decision, that under Section 235 of the Restatement, what is relevant is the state of mind of the employee, not the perspective of the employer. Normally, the Illinois Supreme Court said, ordinarily, I think is the word they used, those are judged by the external trappings. For example, this brings us very close to Judge Kaney's decision in Graham, where an insane municipal police officer handcuffed a suspect, put him on the ground, and then put two bullets into the back of his head, and yet was found to be acting within the scope of his employment. There, Officer Mueller died before the case went to suit. And so the only evidence that the court had to determine whether or not he was acting within the scope of his employment was the fact that he was in uniform, that he was in a police car, that he was responding to a patrol. But here we have undisputed testimony, and the government admits that on March 5th, 2002, Chief Hill was operating under an insane delusion that he was dealing with a Somali warlord, had no idea where he in fact was. That is the kind of work we train, deploy Navy SEALs to perform.
What language, counsel, in the Badgent opinion supports the proposition that all three elements of the test under the restatement for scope of employment, within the scope of employment, respondeat superior liability,
right,
are evaluated subjectively as opposed to objectively?
That would be on the court's opinion at page 12, where the Supreme Court said, because that was, if you remember, the appellate court said, from the perspective of the employer, this is the kind of, for the employee, and that was the woman who just drew blood, went out to a bar and was sharing with her friends that the plaintiff was pregnant, something she knew she absolutely was not supposed to do. And the appellate court said, well, that's from the perspective of the employer. They're supposed to be maintaining confidentiality 24/7. The Illinois Supreme Court said that is absolutely the wrong analysis. What's really relevant here is the perspective of the employee, not the needs of the employer. And from the perspective of the employee, he was faced with a Somali warlord. He resorted to his instincts and his training.
So, in other words, I think, am I wrong in saying that the argument boils down to once a SEAL, always a SEAL? In other words, there's no time or assignment in which the Navy should not have been expecting him to use these combat skills?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. He, as he testified, and I hate to use this analogy, if, heaven forbid, the door were to burst open and Al-Qaeda operatives were to burst in here, I would run. But Kirk Hill would not. Even though it's in the United States, even though it's in the federal courthouse.
Is he around?
He is not.
No.
He is not.
No.
He is not.
Because, no.
But
we sit here waiting for those tempting.
No. And I understand that. But he testified without contradiction that he is trained to be a SEAL at all times. If he is faced with a combat situation, and I think that what the district court erred in saying is he wasn't operating under orders, but the restatement and the Badgent decision make quite clear doesn't have to be expressly authorized. Yes, Judge Lex.
Even though the Navy was keeping him as far away as possible from anything resembling a combat situation?
Yes, because they were treating him, and they kept him initially on an inpatient basis, and then they released him into the general population where he was able to access Mr. Foster, even though he was, as the government now concedes, operating under an insane delusion.
I'm not finding support in the Badgent opinion for the assertion that you've made that the entire agency test is applied from the subjective point of view of the employee. You said it appears on page 12, but the decision ends on page 9. So perhaps you can point to some exact language where the court concludes that all three restatement factors are evaluated subjectively. That's not in the restatement. That's not how the restatement has ever been applied. The third factor is subjective. The first two are objective. So I'd be very surprised if the Illinois Supreme Court would step outside that general approach to agency law.
And I agree. If I said all three, then I'm sorry, I misunderstood the court's question. But and you're right, that they are talking about the third factor.
Right.
Okay.
And we've got two other factors
and that's
here,
absolute.
And they all have to be established. That's the import of the Badgent opinion, is that if you flunk one, you're out.
That's exactly right.
So your whole argument is based on the third factor, which is the subjective factor, which is to say that the employee's action has to be actuated at least in part by a purpose to serve the master, and it seems to me you win on that,
yes,
but you lose on the other two, which are that this is conduct.
This is the kind of work we hire them to do.
On the kind that he was employed to perform,
right,
given the rules of engagement and setting of his employment, which was at the naval base in the fitness center, not in a combat theater. And number two is that it occurs substantially within the authorized time and space limits. You know, there may be an issue on that since he was off duty and there's really no on-duty rule according,
right,
to the cases that you've cited, but it's still an objective factor.
And he testified 24/7. If I'm faced on the second factor, if I'm faced with a combat situation.
But that's only relevant if that's subjectively evaluated. If it's evaluated objectively based on the evidence, then what was in his mind about that doesn't matter.
I see that my time.
Can you answer the question?
Thank you. The only thing that I can say about that, Your Honor, is that in this court's decision in Graham, the employee was insane at the time that he killed a perfectly harmless individual and yet was held to be acting within the scope of his employment. And that is the case that we believe we have here. We would ask that the district court's decision be reversed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller.
May it please the court and counsel. I'd like to start by pointing out that both of the other parties in this case are federal employees, and that if the United States had actually scoped Mr. Hill in the way that he has requested, and the United States had been substituted in as the defendant, there would have been a consequence to that, which is that Mr. Foster, who is also a federal employee, would have had his claim barred by the assault and battery exception to the Federal Tort Claims Act. And that's not directly relevant to this, but it is indirectly relevant in the sense that I think a fair amount of counsel's arguments in the briefs is that the United States has abandoned someone who is a federal employee unfairly. The fact of the matter in this case is there's federal employees on both sides of it, and one decision would have left Mr. Hill in the position where he is today, but the other decision would have barred Mr. Foster's claim from the start. So I think that's worth noting as far as perspective. I'd also note that either decision by the United States to either scope or not scope Mr. Hill would not result in liability for the United States. In this case, the way it is now, we're not the defendant. On the other hand, again, if it was Mr. Foster's claim against the United States, the assault and battery exception to the FTCA would bar the claim. So the United States has no financial interest in this case one way or the other.
Might there not be some liability based on the fact that he was released in the general population?
That would be a separate type of claim against the United States, and there's some reference to that actually in the restatement section 228 in the comment A. And there are those other types of claims out there, and I don't think this case addresses that, but that's a possibility.
That's direct liability, though? That's direct liability for the government's own negligence. That's not vicarious liability?
Right, exactly.
So that's why it's excluded from the restatement of agency?
It's a separate type of claim. Exactly. It's not respondeat superior.
What were the nature of Mr. Foster's injuries?
I'm sorry?
Nature of Mr. Foster's injuries?
Mr. Foster, he had some severe injuries to his eye, and I believe he has limited vision because of that. I believe he also had some damage to his hearing on the side of the head that he was hit. I think the court already addressed this a bit with counsel's first argument, but I think at this point it's pretty clear that all of the elements need to be met in order for the test to be satisfied. I think we know that, one, from the decision rendered by the Supreme Court in the Badgen case that was cited by Mr. Hill. In that case, they clearly say that all the elements must be met. I think you also know that just from looking at the restatement section 228, because it lists all the elements in a conjunctive fashion. There's an and at the end of the list, which means all of the elements need to be met. And I won't go into that further. I would say if it would be helpful to the court, I'd be happy to submit an additional statement with respect to the Badgen case. That case was decided by the Illinois Supreme Court after the briefing was fully completed in this case. If that would be helpful, I'm happy to address that and to specifically address the point made by counsel that he thought all the elements were still subjective under that case. We don't agree with that. We believe that only the one element is subjective and the other elements are all from the perspective of the employer. I also think it's clear, I think at some points in Mr. Hill's arguments, he suggested that he did not really admit that the rules of engagement he was talking about were just limited to Somalia. And I'm happy to read back some of the testimony from his deposition, which makes that really clear.
He did acknowledge, I mean, that's what I recall, he did acknowledge that they were limited to that.
That's correct. And I won't go into that if that is not something additional that the court would need at this point. I believe that we've set out in our brief the reasons why we believe that three of the four elements are not met under the test and why we believe that the fourth element itself is even a bit ambiguous. But I won't go through that all at this point. I'm happy to conclude to this point unless there's any other questions that the court would like to ask me.
Any of our precedent in the Seventh Circuit have any impact on this case?
Well, I think there's the Graham case, which we discuss in our brief. In that case, obviously, it ended up going the other way. The result went the other way. But I think the way in which the court discussed the case was actually cuts in favor of the way the district court decided this case. In the Graham case, the court looked to the fact that the police officer was on duty, was within his jurisdiction, was responding to a call from another officer, which was part of his regular duties, and was doing the sort of thing that he normally did as part of his job when he helped arrest a suspect and subdue the suspect and put him onto the ground. Obviously, the officer ended up using excessive force, which was impermissible and improper, but he was doing the sort of thing that he was hired to do. Of course, this case is fundamentally different than that. In this case, Mr. Hill, obviously he, when he was in Somalia, was involved in combat, and one of his duties was the use of force against enemy combatants. But 8 years later, when he's at the naval base, at the Great Lakes Naval Base, his duties were to help teach sailors, overweight sailors, how to do exercises. Those duties had nothing to do with the use of force or enemy combatants or Somali warlords or anything else like that. So we think that he fell outside of the scope of his employment.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Much time. I'll give you a minute if you want to make a response.
The only thing I'd like to address is the question of the fact that the government now argues that if they'd scoped Mr. Hill, well, Mr. Foster would have been out of luck. I don't think that that is relevant one way or the other. Regardless, this court's review of both the U.S. Attorney's decision and the district court's decision in this case, which is based not on factual issues but on the denial, legal question of Mr. Hill's immunity, is de novo. And we would ask this court to exercise its de novo review and reverse the district court's decision. Unless the court has any further questions, we would ask that you reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.